This is Franz. Welcome back to Sailing in the Mediterranean podcast. It's been a while since I've posted, and it's because I have been trying to find some other people to interview for the podcast, and I have not had very much luck. In fact, I contacted the lady that was in charge of marketing for SunSail, and the name of the company that owns SunSail is called TUI Marine. TUI Marine, and they also own the moorings. And I see a lot of SunSail charter sailboats in the Mediterranean, and I thought, well, I would offer them some free publicity. I could have somebody from their company come on the podcast and talk about their services, talk about their bases, and give some basic information that might be of interest to the listeners of this podcast. And I left a message, a voice message. They don't have a contact email form. There's no way to contact these people by email. But I did call, and I left a message on the voicemail for this lady in Clearwater, Florida. And I never bothered. She never bothered even replying to my voicemail. So I'm not particularly impressed with the marketing department at TUI Marina. So anyway, I've got a couple other people that plan on coming on and talking about their operations in the next few weeks. Today I've had some email correspondence with a couple companies that run charter operations in the Mediterranean, and I'm looking for people like that as well. I'm looking for marina managers that can talk about the marinas they have and the services they offer. I would like to have a good database of mechanics at the various locations, and I don't know if that's worthy of a podcast or not, but I do know that one headache I've had from time to time is finding good mechanics. And I'm sure anybody else that has an old boat like mine also has issues like this. Usually you're subject to whatever marina you can get into and use the services there. Now, in Turkey, I've been pretty happy with the services I've got at the marinas in Turkey, but I don't have much good to say about the mechanical services of the marina that I stayed at in Dubrovnik. In fact, I needed some refrigeration work done in Dubrovnik, and I contacted a quote-unquote refrigeration mechanic. He came out, looked at it, and then never bothered returning my phone calls, and then he said he would show up on the boat one day, and he never showed up, so I don't have much good to say about the mechanics I've had experience with in Dubrovnik. But anyway, moving on my website on www.medsailor.com, I put a whole page on Turkish marinas. This is information that I have in my book, Bareboat Chartering in Turkey, 2012, and I'll be updating that pretty soon to 2013. But if you plan on chartering in Turkey, I think it's a worthwhile reference book to have. It's not very expensive. I think $7 or something like that. It's pretty darn cheap for the information that's contained in it. It's not the only good guide out there, but I think it's a good guide. But I'm also going to be adding in the near future some more information on the Greek shipping industry. Now, this is an interest of mine and something I wrote a paper on, and I wrote a book on it. And I may take some excerpts of my book and put it in a special page in the website, and it'll just be on the Greek shipping industry, some information on the Greek shipping industry and the islands that are of particular interest to those that are interested in shipping. If you're a sailor, you see these big, massive ships going by, and those are the professional mariners that are running those. And I find it interesting that it is so cheap to move products by water, so amazingly cheap. And I think it's a fascinating industry. Right now, they're in the doldrums. They're really overbuilt back in the good years, and there's a lot of ships that are barely covering costs right now. So not a good time for the dry bulk or the tanker shipping market right now. And I don't even think it's that great for the container market. But I'm not particularly interested in the container market. I'm more interested in the tanker and the dry bulk market, because that's where the Greek shipping industry specializes. And when I sail around Greece, I'm amazed that some extremely prominent shipbuilding families came from tiny little insignificant islands. The one I am most interested in was is the island of Ienousis, which is just off the northwest or northeast corner of Chios. You can now contact me and stay in touch with this podcast and what I'm posting on the website by following me on Twitter and also on Facebook. Now, I am a real amateur when it comes to using both Facebook and Twitter. I would love to hand this off to somebody that just wanted to take care of this for me, because it's just not something that I have a particular interest in. But for right now, I guess I'm doing all of it. So what have I been doing? Well, I've been starting to plan out my next summer sale. And next summer, I'll be leaving from Bodrum, Turkey, and I've got to make a decision on which direction to go. I already know who my first crew is going to be, because these are people that have sailed with me before and people that understand the boat and people that are willing to work. Because putting the boat in the water is a lot of work at the beginning of the year. The recommissioning of the boat takes a lot of time. And this year it's going to be a lot more work, because I'm going to be painting the bottom of the boat before I put it in the water. I'm going to be installing a new bowsprit. I'm going to be rewiring a windlass, and I'm going to be repairing or buying a new windlass to put on. Last year when I was sailing, my windlass started really not having much power. And it's a Maxwell HWC 850 windlass, a good windlass. I put it on in Malta well over 10 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago. And before that, I had a hand windlass, and it was one of the biggest improvements I made to my boat, was having an electric windlass. And I have it so that I can sit back in the cockpit and raise and lower the anchor by myself in the cockpit. Now, I know a lot of people have foot switches that are up right at the bow of the boat to raise and lower the windlass, and that's great if you always have somebody else on board to bring up the windlass. But quite often I will sail by myself, and I will need to drop the anchor and raise the anchor by myself. And so what I did is I put it's basically a box with an up and a down push button switch in it, and it's wired inside the boat. And I take this box, and it's on a long wire, and it'll reach all the way to the front of the boat and all the way to the back of the boat. And so if I need to walk forward, I take this with me and walk forward and raise it. Otherwise, if I'm by myself, I will just drop the anchor from the cockpit, and when I'm leaving, I will raise the anchor from the cockpit. And it works out well for me. I've done this under very high wind situations, and it's been wonderful. Before I, like I say, I had a hand-operated windlass, and it was a lot of work, With an electric windlass, if I get a bad set, it's not a big deal. I just raise it back up and reset. And everybody that sailed has had to do that on many occasions. So last year, my windlass just started not having any guts anymore. It would bog down. It would bring up the anchor very, very slowly. And I just assumed I was going to have to buy a new windlass. And before I left the boat this year, I took it off the boat. I cut it off, and I was about ready to throw it out, but I decided just to leave it on the deck for the winter and see if I could think of something else to do. It's mounted to a stainless steel plate that's mounted to the bowsprit, and everywhere the bolts went through the bowsprit, I started getting dry rot there. Other than that, my bowsprit's in great shape, so I've learned that you don't put bolts in bowsprits, and so I'm going to have to replace the bowsprit this year. I've got a company in Turkey that's given me a bid on building the bowsprit and promised me that it would be installed before I got back next year. Now, I've sent this company some emails, and they haven't responded to them. And this is right next to Yacht Marina in Bodrum, and I'm a little concerned because they haven't bothered responding. And before I can go sailing next year, I've got to replace this bowsprit, and at the same time, I'd like to replace the boom can on my boat. The bowsprit's the wooden part that pokes out the front of a traditional-looking boat like mine, and the boomkin is the sort of the wooden triangle that comes off the back of the boat. Now the backstay connects to the boomkin, and the forestay connects to the end of the bowsprit, and the staysail stay connects to about the middle of the bowsprit to where it connects to the bow of the boat. Other problems I'm having, my battery charger doesn't seem to be working very well, and I may have to replace the battery charger. Now, the battery charger I've got on the boat right now was installed when I built the boat, and it's running off a U.S. System. So it's a 110 charger. So it's really a convoluted way to charge my batteries right now when I have shore power. I step down transformer where it transforms the voltage from 220 down to 110, and then that's wired into my charger that charges the batteries. And it's worked well since 97, but if I replace it, I'll replace it with a European battery charger. The ones I looked at seem a little larger than I can really fit in the boat, and I'm really amazed that I've done some research, and it only looks like there's one manufacturer of marine battery chargers in Europe, or one main manufacturer. That looks to me like there's room for more than one. Come on, you entrepreneurs in Europe, why don't you get your act together and make some smaller size battery chargers? The technology's improved a lot, and then the States would have a half a dozen people making battery chargers for marine use, and they'd be coming in all shapes and sizes. So there definitely is room for more competition in the battery charger market in Europe. If I can do that, I'll try to replace that at the same time. It's going to be an expensive commissioning year for the boat, but that's to be expected from a boat that's over 20 years old. So my first crew, Roger and Kevin. In fact, Kevin will probably want to go over there a couple weeks early and just hang out on the boat, get it ready, do a little bit of work on the boat, and just use it as a base of operations for doing a little bit of travel in Turkey. He hasn't traveled there before. He sailed with me from Dubrovnik down to Greece last year. Then my other friend Roger. Roger's sailed with me a lot. He and I sailed around Vancouver Island one year. He's sailed a lot with me in various parts of Europe. He hasn't been on the boat for several years, and he's been wanting to come back again. So I'll have him back and Kevin back for the first crew. Next crew, I don't know what I'll do. I've got people sort of sitting in the wings that have asked to go sailing with me, but I'll be quite honest. I always like to expose new people to sailing, and so if I have two clients, and like I say, usually I'll invite clients before I invite other people, but I may be looking for somebody new for a change. I always like to meet new people, and tell you what, I'll throw this out to the listeners of this podcast. If any of you are interested in sailing next summer, particularly if you don't have much experience, but if you have an interesting life history, you have interesting stories to tell, you speak English well, send me an email and make the case for yourself, because I like to meet new people along the way. And I don't have that many European friends, so I guess I'd probably say I'd primarily look to Europeans as being guests on my boat. I might even open that up to a couple. I don't know. I'm sort of open right now to the idea. But yeah, if you're interested, send me an email. So where am I going to go next summer? I really don't know. I've been up and down the Turkish coast many times, but there is one corner of Turkey that I haven't covered yet, and that's the Gökova Gulf, which is the gulf that's just south and east of Bodrum. And usually when I'm sailing there, I'm sailing straight towards Marmaris or Ketchabuku or Bosburn or Dacha or Gnudos. And I've never spent really any time deep in this gulf. I've spent a couple nights at some of the anchorages fairly close to the corner. But I looked on Google Earth, and looks like there's some nice little anchorages way back, tucked in the corner back at the end of that gulf. Doesn't look like there's a lot of services, and I don't seem to listen to, I've never really heard of people that have spent much time back in this gulf. So if I head south, I may do that. But really, I'd probably rather head north this year again. And if you're a sailor in the Mediterranean, especially in the Aegean, you know heading north is usually bucking into the winds. And if it's anything like it was last summer, that's going to be a tough bucking bronco ride going up there. If it's that bad of weather, I'll turn around and change my itinerary in the middle of the summer. I'm not going to force myself to do something that's miserable and uncomfortable. Sailing's supposed to be fun and pleasant. But my plans are going over the 1st of May. And hopefully at that point in time, the Maltemis will not have gotten up. In fact, quite often you'll have southerlies along the Turkish coast. So if I have some southerlies, I'd like to head north. And I've been sort of playing with my rough itinerary. I think I'd like to head over, clear in Kalymnos. I don't want to clear in Kosh. I don't like Kosh. I have bad experience with Kosh. They've got a wonderful marina there that's expensive, and they have a lot of bureaucracy there. So I'm going to head over to Kalymnos to check in. I want to go up the west side of Kalymnos. There's a couple anchorages that I saw last summer that I haven't spent any time in that look pretty interesting. And then I'll head up to Leros, along the east coast of Leros. There's a couple nice anchorages up there, a nice little village that I want to go visit again next year in Leros. Then I want to, the problem I have is there's not very much that I haven't seen already, and I like to have new destinations, new places to go. So about the only place that I really haven't been in Greece is the far south of Greece, which would be the islands of Karpathos, Kassos, Crete, and the Peloponnese Peninsula, the south of Hydra, and then the far north part of Greece. The problem with going south, and this is what always gives me pause, it's easy to go south, but getting back is the hard part. And I could easily take the sleigh ride down and visit Rhodes again. I've been there and spent some time in Rhodes and then stop in Karpathos and then visit the island of Kassos, which is a famous island for the shipping industry. Some very prominent families came from the island of Kassos. And one I've actually got recommended, one of them is the Koulikoundis family. And there's a book in my recommended book section of the website that's, the name of the book is called Feasts of Memory. And it was written by Elias Koulikoundis, a descendant of this family that now lives in New York. And I had the opportunity and the pleasure of interviewing him when I was conducting research for my book. In fact, I quote him heavily in my book. One long passage, it was just such an eloquent passage when he describes, as a young man, his first visit to Greece. He'd grown up as a Greek in America, and they spoke Greek in the home. They kept all traditions. They went to the Greek Orthodox Church, but had never been to Greece, and he still considered himself Greek, even though he was really an American. But he talks about his first visit back to his island, his family's home on the island of Kassos. And the name of the book is called Feasts of Memory. And just a wonderful book. I think it's out of print, but I think you might be able to find it if you're really curious. He sent me an email a few months ago saying he's writing a new book, and he had actually gone onto the website and looked at the traditional folk dancing videos that I had set up, or that I'd taken when I was in Amagoros. He liked the videos, and he said, you know, I'm actually writing a new book that's set in Amagoros. I don't know if it's a history or historical novel, but it's set in Amagoros, and I'm looking forward to reading that book when he comes out with it. But anyway, Elias Koulikoundis, his family came from the island of Kassos, and then on farther to Crete, and in Utah, where I live, there's a lot of Greek immigrants that came from the island of Crete. In fact, I'd say that's the primary island that the Greek members of our community come from. There's a few exceptions to that, but there were a lot of miners that came to Utah to work in the coal and silver and gold mines in Utah that came from Crete. But I don't think I'm going to go that direction. I think I'm going to go north. If anybody listening to this podcast has specific places I'd recommend, probably I've been to most of them. Where I have not been, I have not been to the islands north of Lesbos. I haven't been to those three peninsulas that drop down from the mainland Greece, and that's where I want to go, the far northern islands of Greece. I will stop and visit my favorite islands of Samos and Chios and Ioannousis along the way. I don't know if I may do a side trip and go out to the little tiny island of Pisara. Very few people visit Pisara, and it's a little tiny island just west of Chios. And of course, on the island of Chios, there's about 3-4 harbors there that are some of my favorite harbors. A lot of the shipping families came from Chios and from the tiny little town of Cartamyla on the northern coast. In fact, Galina Harlapsis said, if I really want to get to know the Greek shipping industry, go spend a summer sitting in a cafe in Cartamyla. A lot of Chios Greece retire, and that's where they go live. North of Chios, it's a long hop. Probably stop in Lesbos, but I may do a hop straight over to Skyros. I haven't visited Skyros, and then work my way up to Skathos. And there's a few islands in there that are a national park there that I might stop, and then just work my way around the mainland coast. Don't know if I want to go to Thessaloniki. It's a big town, but I think I'll stop and just south of Thessaloniki, visit those three big peninsulas if I end up going north, and then try to get to Thassos, and then work my way down south. And probably I'd end up trying to get back to Kushadasi and winter my boat in Kushadasi. I've wintered my boat there several times, and I'm pleasantly surprised with the marina. It's a good marina, ACI marina. So anyway, that's sort of my plans, my rough plans for next summer. Things change, and I just wanted to do another quick podcast and tell you what I've been up to. And if any of you listeners have some suggestions on podcasts or have some information that you'd like to share with the people that listen to this podcast, we're getting quite a large following, and I appreciate you listeners. And I appreciate the listeners that have given me positive reviews on iTunes, and I really encourage you, if you're so inclined, to go on to iTunes and give me a 5-star rating, and let's get the numbers up there and get some more listeners. This is for information purposes. I'm not making any money from this podcast. Don't know if I ever will. And also, if any of you are interested in applying for a crew position this summer, send me a personal email. And you need to address it to me, Franz, F-R-A-N-Z, at medsailor.com, and we'll see what happens. No promises. I'm pretty selective, but I do like to meet new people along the way. If you're heading the same direction next summer, perhaps we could meet up in a harbor and drink some ouzo together or some rocky together. That's it for this week. I hope to have some interviews that I conduct and get them up to the podcast in the next week or so. So please visit the website, check out the information we have there. Again, that's www.medsailor.com. And if you have some suggestions, you'll need to email them to me. I don't have comments open in the podcast. And the reason I don't is because I just started getting a lot of junk comments, people trying to sell handbags of all things as comments on my comment section. So I just decided it was more trouble than it was worth to keep deleting these comments and shut off comments altogether. You, of course, are always welcome to email me directly. If you have good questions that I can share with the audience, I'll share them. So thank you very much for listening. Sail safe.